While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radio News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon, Namibia, and welcome to On the Radar News Analysis. Thank you for choosing Eagle FM, the home of informed conversation and credible national dialogue. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and you are listening to On the Radar News Analysis, the program where today's headlines are examined in their full context. It is Friday, the 6th of February, 2026. Now, as Namibia settles into the rhythm of the new year, the national mood remains one of the heightened expectation and growing public scrutiny. Questions of governance, accountability and economic resilience and community well-being continue to dominate public discourse, with decisions taken at this stage set to shape both immediate realities and the country's long-term trajectory. Now, right here on the Radar, we move beyond surface-level reporting. We unpack policy choices, interrogate their implications, and assess how national decisions translate into everyday lived experiences, from urban centers to the most remote rural communities. In a media environment increasingly defined by speed, noise, and competing narratives, On the Radar remains committed to grounded analysis, informed perspectives, and meaningful engagement. Our focus is on clarity, context, and connection between national developments and the lives of ordinary Namibians. From 1300 hours to 1430 every weekday, we bring you expert insight, community voices, and journalism that seeks not only to inform, but to empower throughout public dialogue. You can listen through Eagle FM frequencies, streamers via the Eagle FM website, or download the Eagle FM app. Also, you can stay connected via the WhatsApp channel for real-time updates. Wherever you're listening in from, whether you are on the move, at work, at home, or picking up the kids, stay with us as you examine the issues shaping Namibia's present and influencing its future. This right here is On the Radar News Analysis on Eagle FM, because right here, perspectives matter and the truth stays firmly within the reach. Getting right in today's analysis today, we're talking about the New Year staff address by Lucia Ipumbu. She addressed her staff today in an engagement speaking about work ethics and what is expected from the Ministry of Home Affairs and Immigration, Safety and Security. She's noting on many different aspects that she would want, of course, the employers to change on. Now, this takes place at a critical moment as Namibia advances deeper into the final phase of Vision 2030 and aligns national development priorities with emerging social, economic and governance realities in 2026. The address served as an opportunity for the minister to set the tone for the year ahead. And I must say she certainly did set the tone, reflect on institutional performance in the previous year, and reaffirm the ministry's mandate in responding to persistent and emerging challenges, particularly in the areas of gender equality, social inclusion, child welfare, and the protection of vulnerable populations. Now, against a backdrop of increased public demand for accountability, service delivery efficiency, and measurable impact, the minister's message did speak on strengthening institutional discipline and professionalism, enhancing interdepartmental coordination, accelerating program implementation, and recentering staff around a shared national purpose and ethical public service. Now, the address functions as a motivational yet strategic engagement that acknowledges staff contributions while calling for renewed commitment, innovation, and responsiveness in the execution of government policies and legislation obligations. She did also call on the review some policies or some documents that are already there that the ministry needs to review on, and definitely coordination between them, and to minimize or do away with sending the people that they serve, we the people that they serve, of course, the public, the public away and from one office to the next without really giving them tangible reasons as to why they can't be assisted by a particular personnel. Now, in the broader national context, the New Year staff address aligns with government-wide efforts that is to improve public sector performance and ensure inclusive development that also translate policy commitments into tangible outcomes for communities across Namibia. One particular thing also that the minister highlighted was tangible results. How does the ministry then assess the impact of when they've issued the best, they've issued the IDs? There's a need to look at what was done when the person got their ID. I think sort of like a performance scale to see what actually happens that they would need to be implemented. I must say that the Ministry of Home Affairs, just speaking on Home Affairs on its own and immigration, is one that really needs people that are proactive. It's not really one that needs people that don't think out of the box and sit around, but rather needs very proactive people, because you're dealing with different people, different cases, you know, can be similar but not exactly the same. So I would say the ministry really needs proactive people who are ready to be active and ready to serve the Namibian people. Different stories, different issues, different narratives need different solutions. Also, within her speech, the minister highlighted a number of issues, really. Another particular element that she did speak on is closing down of offices at the hospitals. For instance, she have given example of MediClinic at one point, the way she read a post that said that they cannot issue birth certificates and that the parents or the mother should go to another place to actually get a birth certificate. And she was dressing her staff to say, is that realistic? Especially for women who know that after you've given birth, the only thing you want is rest and to be next to your baby. That is all. Your body can't take on much, really, because at that point you are very exhausted. Almost sort of to say, it's as if your body has been beaten with so many things. So you are in a recovery mode after that delivery, whether it was C-section, whether it was natural delivery. At that point, all you want is rest, you know, bed rest with your little one and the safety of your little one. The last thing you want is to move from one place to the next, even from one, how much more from one hospital to the next hospital to make a birth certificate. So this calls on Home Affairs staff, employees of the Ministry of Home Affairs, to be proactive to ensure that there are documents. What is it that is making that particular office or that particular sector to be closed down? If anything, she did call on more places to be elected or more places to serve the people and for the people to be able to make their documents, their certificates and all that kind of stuff. If, you know, sometimes what requires only one or two or three employees work to get the paper done and bring it to a particular point, and when they don't do that, it costs so many public people that then it costs them their time, it costs them their money, it costs finances of so many people. What one person or two people were supposed to do will now cost 100 people finances, digging out of their pocket to travel long distance to make birth certificates for their children. It was indeed an address whereby the minister was very vocal about a number of issues, also speaking about issuing of birth certificates or issuing of IDs, you know, to Angolan nationals. And she did say, I wouldn't want anyone to misquote me, but there are certain particular individuals who really have been here for a while and are even contributing well to our economy to the Namibian economy, yet they are without IDs. You know, I know of a particular young man who really even now is at university, at the Namibia University of Science and Technology for that matter, and yet is not yet actually recognized. Now let's take a listen to the minister herself, Lucia Ipumbo, addressing her staff, and we're coming to analyze here in the station.
But I should also register my disappointment, ED, especially to your team of Home Affairs, and at the same time, give credit where it's due to the uniform colleagues. I don't know, because they work with order. When the order is given, they heed to the call. They were here on Wednesday in full force. They are back here, and I'm not missing any of them. And you would feel bad if I say I even know them better than you now. Because whenever there is duty call, they are always there. But our civilian component, we don't have to be dragged to come to our own meetings. Because this is our meeting where we are charting the way forward on what we need to do for the year. Thanks to the leaders, I saw Mr. Jason and others going to make sure that others came. Here we are, and I would need to know how many of the people were following online. Only then I will be convinced that the message that is being shared here have gone through. Because this is not my message, it's not Alfanjamba's message, but it's the message of all of us. Because as we are here, we complement each other, and each one of us have a role to play. And if one of us is not here, it's as good as if one component of what is expected from us is not going to be done, because we were not charged on what we have to do and how we are going to do it. We are in February. The month has started and the year started in January. It's never late for me to say Happy New Year to you all, especially the faces that I'm seeing for the first time. Call on each and every one of you to embrace the new year with new energy. I am happy because I made the 10 here in December. Mind you, I was one of the last people to leave. But I made the 10 and I saw there was skeleton staff, meaning that a number of you took your well-deserved rest. And those of you that did not go in December, I was missing some faces in January. And I'm happy to note that you all look rejuvenated and energetic for the year. I want to congratulate you on the many achievements as they were narrated by our executive director here. Those achievements are not individual achievements, but our group achievement. When I say a group, it's all of us, because each one of us have improved here and there. Everyone have made our turnaround times become faster, and all of us have contributed to the success and achievements that were being narrated here. I was listening about national documents. I heard about visas. I have heard about permits, Mr. Scott. And I have heard about police achievement and operations. And I have also heard about the achievements of the correctional service. And I want to extend a special appreciation. And this is unique because even on my way here, somebody was whispering, not knowing that I'm listening, on how clean this building is. The first class trophy goes to the hygienic officers of this ministry. Of course, we have the newest building.
Quite interesting. She's referring to the Ministry of Home Affairs building. And we know that, let's give flowers to credit where it belongs, and flowers to where they should go to. We know that former Minister of Home Affairs, Madam Pentukeni Ivola Itana, now retired and probably resting at her home, really did her part to revamp the Ministry of Home Affairs. From the story that I've heard, she did say that, was it President Pohamba who actually asked her to then become the Minister of Home Affairs, because it really needed a revival, because what was happening at the Ministry of Home Affairs back then in a passport that would take longer than a month. But now, within 2 weeks, you have your passport. And also the building itself from outside really speaks volumes. And also, not only for that matter, the inside of it is definitely clean. Now, I'm puzzled to actually, I noticed that there's a particular ministry that was moving, and I'm not sure whether they went on to rent or perhaps it's one of their buildings as well. But then I think let's start somewhere by saying every ministry has to have its own building, you know, not necessarily renting, but have to build its own. How long should the government rent in other in people's buildings and spending a lot of government money, you know, taken out from government coffers? But I'm speaking under correction. I'm not so sure if that particular ministry, I can't mention the name because I'm not so sure anyway, whether they're relocating, they're moving on to their own building. But yeah, looking at the building of the Ministry of Home Affairs really gives that, really, as if so to say, our documents are in good hands. But nonetheless, let's continue to listen. There is really more to the story than just this. Stay tuned.
But I should also register my disappointment missing some faces in January. And I'm happy to note that you all look rejuvenated and energetic for the year. I want to congratulate you on the many achievements as they were narrated by our executive director here. Those achievements are not individual achievements, but our group achievement. When I say group, is all of us, because each one of us have improved here and there. Everyone have made our turnaround times become faster, and all of us have contributed to the success and achievements that were being narrated here. Yeah, I was listening about national documents. I heard about visas. I have heard about permits, Mr. Scott, and I have heard about police achievement and operations, and I have also heard about the achievements of the correctional service. And I want to extend a special appreciation, and this is unique because even on my way here, somebody was whispering, not knowing that I'm listening, on how clean this building is. The first class trophy goes to the hygienic officers of this ministry. Of course, we have the newest building in town, but it's the most cleanest building in town as well. Our hygienic officers are under the leadership of my dear mother. Your commitment and dedication should be an emulation for all of us, that indeed the Ministry of Home Affairs, Immigration, Safety and Security can shine if any of us does what is expected of us. Our office is presentable at all times. I come from another offices, many other offices, where you will be on the lift with papers, with bubble gums, with the remaining of the maize, but not here. The facility is clean, is presentable at all times. Please, my team, keep it up, and the first accolades go to you. Because you must understand that the impression and the first impression counts. For someone just to enter our premises in the find any undesirable look at any entrance, their morale is already turned, and they would not expect anything positive from us. Even when you make a small comment, they are able to already make a judgment. And let us not lead our customers and our clients into that mode. We must be the ministry that everybody should talk about. I know a few months ago I complained about a car wash that I undesirably found there. Don't know established by whom. I complained about the grass that was growing around our building. I complained, IGP, about a taxi ring that was created in front of this building. But I see all those are history and elements of the past. I know whatever we say and whatever we share does not fall on the deaf ears. And those that are responsible for that, thank you very much for making our office our home. Because we spend, some of us, by law, supposed to be 8 hours here. But some of us spend 10 to 12 hours here. So we must make this home habitable to all of us. And when I say that, I'm extending to all our facilities. It doesn't end here. I've been at the police headquarters. I've been at some stations, of course, because of some other challenges, they might not look as expected, but we are getting there in terms of the little budget that we get to make sure that all our facilities look presentable. I should start with the component of the law enforcement officers. Inspector General and your team, we have taken note of the reduced accidents on our national roads. And that is the first credit that we want to extend to you and your team for a job well done, especially the last festive season. You, together with other stakeholders, have done a sterling job on this regard. And equally, your crime prevention efforts over the festive season appear to have yielded positive results, as reflected on the statistics that we have noted. A job well done, and keep it up. To the colleagues of National Correctional Service, we commend you, first and foremost, for the improved food production outcomes, and secondly, for the inclusivity you have demonstrated in your recruitment processes. I am receiving credit on your behalf for all others that you have brought on board that are recognized by everyone. Keep rising and keep changing your standards and keep demonstrating that through measurable results, the ministry can deliver with a purpose. Colleagues, this ministry sits at the center of people's lives. We issue identity documents, we regulate entry and the residence, we safeguard communities, we rehabilitate and correct, we uphold the rule of law and public confidence. When we perform well, the nation feels secure and respected. But when we perform poorly, when we delay, when we send people from one office to the other office, when the files goes missing, when people get different answers from one desk to the next, when we do not give responses, we frustrate the public. And that should be in the past. Going forward, we should make sure that we do not undermine the trust of the people in the state. We are the representative of the state when it comes to that what we are charged with. That is why I speak to you today with appreciation and warmth, but also with firmness on service delivery. Here, we cannot negotiate. Let me begin by grounding our work where it must always be grounded, which is our national priorities. Our focus, first and foremost, must be informed by the priorities of the 8th administration, as articulated in our NDP 6, in the SWAPO Party Manifesto, and its implementation plan, as well as at the operational level in our ministerial strategic plan that we just launched for 25 up to 2030. By the way, let me pause there and appreciate you and also pass on your appreciation from the Office of the Prime Minister for being the first office to launch its strategic plan after the launch of NDP 6. That alone is not enough. We need to translate those commitments into the programs, the targets, and deliverables, which should be delivered. Therefore, each and every directorate, every region, every station, and every individual officer must be able to answer a simple question. How does what I am doing today advance those priorities? We cannot afford busy, busy work, but no outcome. We cannot afford activity without impact. Yes, I have listened to the statistics of how many documents were issued. Were they able to translate?
Let's pause here now for a scheduled commercial break, but we'll be back shortly to continue. Stay tuned.
Fall in love with the best prices at WB. Get 500 gram Bokomo cornflakes for $31.99. 2 kg nice rice for only $34.99. 1.5 kg real good mixed chicken portions for $79.99. And 10 kg Bokomo fat cook flour for just $137.99. See more February specials at furmanbrock.com. We care.
But I should also register my disappointment, ED, especially to your team of whom I serve. It's the only pension money of their grandmother that was left over for them to come to our office. We have listened to the statistics of how many documents were issued. Were they able to translate in the creation of employment? Were they able to translate into a number of students getting registered pass and getting admission to tertiary institutions because they have received their IDs, or we merely just issued the documents? At the end of the day, there should be measurable impacts and outcome that should change the picture of the country in general. Colleagues, allow me to be candid and specific about what we must improve. Because we do not correct what we refuse to name. First, we must address slow service delivery processes and protracted feedback cycles. I have experienced them myself. You go to this one, no, you must go to the next one. This is the only one who knows. And then, Minister, why are you receiving inquiries? I am here to serve the Namibian nation. From a blue person to a green person, whether they are how senior, how junior, I am charged with the responsibility of ensuring that I serve them. I have encountered question, Minister, why do people come to me? They come to me because I'm charged with the responsibility of directing this ministry. And they feel if they do not get the service that they deserve, they would end up by me. And if we were doing our work, nobody would come to me. If we were to serve them diligently at our level, they will never escalate to my level. But also I want to assure you that when people come to me, I will charge you to serve them. I would never, and I have never asked any one of you to do a favor to anyone. What I want you is to give a clear and a complete response. If the process or whatever the document the person is asking is not practically possible to be issued, give the real reasons. Don't fabricate reasons or give a half-baked response. Or it's only after when they come back that you give another response. If you are saying, for argument's sake, and I'm giving this as an example, if you are to appeal for a permit that is rejected, you have to wait for 6 months. Why don't you tell that client on your first letter to them? Don't wait for them to come and appeal only then to tell them that, no, they must wait for 6 months. I'm giving that as an example just to demonstrate that we must learn to serve people to the best of our abilities. And if you give that person that answer, I'm sure that person would never come back to my office. They come to my office when you tell them that, yeah, yours is denied, without all those reasons. And also, amongst the reasons we give, let us not speak to the people in language that they don't understand. If you go and quote a law, section number what of which other law, are we all learned colleagues? Of course we are not. And I would never be able to understand what that section, let alone I don't even understand the legal language that contained in there. Our responses should be simplified for any lay person to understand why this cannot be done or which document is outstanding. And this blanket kind of, yeah, these people who are like this, they are, each one and every case is unique. So listen to them, attend to them in their own capacity, and don't just lump sum them with everybody else and believe that because they come from Angola, their cases are all, these are illegal Angolan immigrants. But amongst those illegal Angolan immigrants, there is an immigrant who came in Namibia before 78. And your laws are saying something different for anyone who came before 78. And sometimes before you even listen on when the person arrived here, you have already summarized, she or he is an illegal immigrant from Angola. Please attend to the finer details so that we keep up the name of this ministry and everybody would be appreciating our services. Sending people from pillar to post. Those of us are here, we have cars, we can afford to pay a taxi. Some of these clients that we serve is the only pension money of their grandmother that was left over for them to come to our offices. But the way we send them from one office to the next, to the counselor's office, to the traditional, to church, and they bring all those papers, and again you say, ah, they are still not correct. Until they have no money anymore, until they demoralize and they lose hope in the ministry, then they go home and sit and they believe there is no solution to their problem. I want to believe to every problem there should be a solution. If the solution is not today, if someone does not meet their requirement age for them to qualify for a PRP, tell them, go home and wait for 2 years more. There is hope for them and they will be counting days. But if you just tell them you don't qualify, go home, then they believe Home Affairs cannot serve me and cannot help me. And that's why how we serve people is very important on the responses and the feedback we give to the people. And we must always give a clear direction of what needs to be done. If I want to also look at one point and one thing that we are missing, is the professionalism of our service. Professionalism does not entail only saying yes or saying no. But it's about how you say yes and how you say no. Send a person back home with hope, just like I have said, that when they go back, they look forward to coming back. Don't send them back home that they don't look forward to come back to Home Affairs. I shared some videos with ED and with some of you colleagues of people recording you because of your behaviors. And then you start fighting them because we have the officers who are here. When it starts getting trouble and getting hot, you call in the security officers to come and aid your misbehavior. Why would the police officer be called when the people start recording you because you are misbehaving? Let us serve people with the highest level of professionalism. If you are saying no to a person, or I can't help you, or you go sit there, say it in the language that needs to be said to anyone who comes to offices. The one thing we forget is that at this office, we serve people who are already distressed. Some have lost their loved ones. Some, they need their IDs because they are required for school or for a job. Somebody just gave birth. They are coming to get a birth certificate.
Okay, now joining me in studio telephonically is Matthew Hangome. A very good afternoon to you, Matthew, and welcome to On the Reading Is Analysis.
Thank you, ma'am.
Matthew, we're talking about your story in context of what the Minister of Home Affairs, Immigration and Safety and Security, Lucia Ipumbo, actually addressed today, in that she's referring that her staff should actually look into people's cases, even those from the Angolan borders. Now, I do know that you were born in Angola. Kindly give us your story so that people can understand why you are even joining us in studio this afternoon.
All right, yes. Just as my name was mentioned, my name is Matthew Hangome.
Mm-hmm.
Just the correction, I was actually not born in Angola.
Oh.
I was born in Namibia by Angolan parents.
Okay.
Yes, born in Chumeb, that was 1998. Mm-hmm. In Chumeb. Both of my parents are Angolan. But I was born in here. And then time came actually when I supposed to apply for the citizenship of Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, back then when my mom came in Namibia to give birth to me, she stayed for a while and then she went back to Angola. We stayed there for quite a couple of years, and then I returned back to Namibia then. Now the time came whereby I wanted actually to start school, as of course, some people are aware that the education of Angola is not so
up to standard.
Up to standard.
Mm.
Yes, not up to standard. And worst of it, I have been in the village then when I was schooling there.
Mm-hmm.
So it was quite a tough thing.
You're actually a cattle header, right? Don't omit that one.
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And even though how old that time?
Which time was that?
When you were cattle heading before you started school?
I was in my teenage age, okay. I think, yes, maybe in the 13, 14, 15, because I remember when I started school, I was 17 years old,
mm-hmm.
and that was just some years back then. So when now the time now came for me to apply for the citizenship, that of course the ID and the birth certificate, we went to the Home Affairs with my mom, in the absence of my father, because my father has never been, if I may be well, he's never been in Namibia.
Okay.
Yes. Only my mom that normally comes to Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
So we applied for a birth certificate, but the one I got was written birth certificate for non-Namibian citizens.
Yeah.
Apparently that is due to my parents. To the status of my parents, because since both of them are foreigners, they are from Angola.
Mm-hmm.
The constitution of, I don't know, is it Home Affairs or you call it the ex somewhere,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You say that apparently you carry the status of
your parents' nationality.
Oh, thank you. Alright, thank you. So, yes, yeah, so that was it. Then, I got now that birth certificate, mm-hmm. written non-Namibian citizen.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, of course, for you to get the ID, you must have birth certificate.
Mm.
Now, for me to go and apply for an ID, I was told that I have to get an ID that is also for a foreigner. Kind of pingish ID, I don't know.
Okay.
But I never saw it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, so that is how I managed to get the best certificate now, which is also what it was not allowing me to be a full, to be a full citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Can I continue or should I?
You may continue.
Yes. And then now, there's some years now went by.
Mm-hmm.
Because I got the IG, the best certificate when I was in my, when I went to secondary school. So throughout my primary school, I was using a consular card, which I obtained from the embassy of Angola.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then after my grade, if I can recall well, just after my grade 11 or so, that's when now we went to the Home Affairs with my mom again to change my birth certificate.
Yeah.
Because since I made the birth certificate, the first one, of course, I applied for, I was with only my mom. And at the particular, because you know the birth certificate, it's a particular, your particular, and then there's the detail of a child,
mm-hmm.
then the mother, the father.
Mm-hmm.
So at my father's detail, it was empty since he was not present.
Yeah.
So my mom now has to go to my uncle, who is a brother to my father.
Mm-hmm.
To stand for me as my father.
Who is a Namibian or is an Angolan?
Yeah, he's a Namibian.
Okay.
For him, he's a Namibian. So when we went now, we had to make a declaration to the police. A declaration was made whereby my uncle declared that he was my biological father. In the time we made a birth certificate, which was written non-Namibian citizen. He was not absent that time.
Mm-hmm.
Which then, that time, yeah, by God's grace, now I am born again.
Okay.
I've given my life to Jesus Christ, and then I have met the gospel of truth, of holiness and righteousness. Well, in that time, I made that birth certificate now with my anger. With mm-hmm. all the declaration made, I was also in support of the declaration that was made. I came to meet a doctrine. I mean, the teachers, when I gave my life to Jesus, I was preached to, I believe the gospel. And then there was one teaching which touched that area of my life, which was restitution. The doctrine of restitution, of course, just maybe in short, it has to do with the amendment of your past life to correct your wrongdoings that you have done in the past before you came to Christ.
Okay.
So I had now to, it was really, it was haunting me to the point whereby I could not rest. I seek for counseling. I asked here and there, of course, from the brethren. They told me that, yes, you have to do what is right. Otherwise, all the Christianity you claim to have attained, it will be in vain, since this case will hold you accountable mm-hmm. in the day of judgment before the Lord. And then now I had to go back to the Home Affairs to do what is right, as the scripture says, because I sincerely want to go to heaven.
Okay.
Even at this moment, I am heavenly bound.
Yeah. So you went to Home Affairs?
So I went to Home Affairs now, and then to appeal myself, to avail myself and to tell them the whole story or the whole truth, what really happened is how I came to obtain the citizenship of Namibia. Yes, because I got that birth certificate now birth certificate for Namibian citizenship.
Mm.
So it was now officially changed to a Namibian citizenship. And then it was after that I went to apply for an ID. I got an ID. I had now the birth certificate as well. all the documents.
Yeah.
I had them.
Yeah.
And that was now during my year of, during the year of 20, yeah, in my grade 12 actually, when I was writing my AS.
Mm-hmm. And what was the feedback? Yeah. What was the feedback of the Ministry of Home Affairs?
Yeah. So the feedback was that, I told them everything, that this is what happened. The document that I have gained was not in a righteous way. And I realized that it was wrong. Now I came to ask for apology and for forgiveness from you as the Home Affairs. And then they said, first they took my birth certificate.
Mm-hmm.
They took the birth certificate. They say that they're going to call me back for the ID. I could go with the ID. I was allowed to go with the ID back home.
Okay.
And then there was now a time where they called me for the ID, if I remember well.
Mm.
And firstly they took the birth certificate. Then that day they took again the ID. They went with the ID.
Yeah.
I mean, I left it there. They confiscated all the documents.
Yeah.
They said they were going to call me. The man who I approached, he was actually the one also that made us to make the ID, to change the details now.
Mm-hmm.
So then I gave them the ID, and then they say, we will call you. We'll take up the case with the executive director.
Mm-hmm.
If I may remember well.
Okay.
So that was now that year of 2024, if I may remember. 2024, yes.
Okay.
2024.
Interesting. Now, Matthew, you have obviously gone on to, there's a part that I wish you had addressed, that as much as you're also like the street kids, sort of, I don't want to say street, the Angolan kids working in the street, similar to that, and gone on to primary school at a very older age, and went on to become the head boy for that particular school, and now went on to secondary school and passed very well. And now tell us about your career, where you are now, because this story, I want to use your case study.
I wrote my grade 12, and then I passed well with good samples, although not A stars. I think I got around about 35 points. That was both in AS and ordinary level. At this moment now,
mm-hmm.
I am a student at NAS. This is my second year.
Yeah.
At NAS, studying Bachelor of Accounting. The Bachelor of Accounting, that is my course which I'm doing now for it's a 3-year course, a bachelor.
Yeah.
Now, this is my second year at NAS.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. And up to now, you don't have an ID and you can't really apply for NSFAFE, am I correct?
Yeah, actually, I was attempting to apply for NSFAF the year I began my tertiary education.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when now the truth met me, whereby I took the step to go to the Home Affairs to do my restitution, just to find out at that moment that what I did was wrong. Now, actually, the whole process was halted.
Mm.
The whole process was out. I could not continue to apply for NSFAF anymore.
Mm.
So until now, at this moment, I don't have any funds from any financial assistance.
Mm. I hear you. And this is what triggered me to actually call you up, Matthew. It is because the minister, Lucia Ipumbu herself, spoke about how children who are born to parents of foreigners actually suffer. Even though they didn't choose to be born by parents of foreigners, they actually then are caught up in a web that then could have been sort of like avoided with the way things are being run now, or the way some of the things have been put in place in terms of the Ministry of Home Affairs. But of course, I do believe that this matter will be dealt with extensively, and perhaps even you should make a 10 at the Ministry of Home Affairs this time around to just see how far, I mean, considering that the minister was even addressing the staff for the new year and of course rectifying on certain matters and calling on her employees or her workers or her colleagues to actually, hit the ground running. And those are not their particular words, but the minister's, but the president's words as, rather, but I borrow it to this particular instant because she did speak about a lot of things. And one of, your particular case was one of the matters that we actually addressed, because I do understand that, the ministry would want to do things the right way. You know, there are sometimes, where things, have been overlooked, but each case is quite very different and very significant. So yeah, I think that would be my advice to you, but thank you so much for sharing your story with us, Matthew.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. I certainly wish you all the best with your documents.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right.
And then you had it from Matthew Hangome. I specifically wanted him to narrate his story as a case study, sort of to see, to lean on what the minister is really addressing. Children born to parents who are both foreigners tend to really suffer, you know, as much as some, you know, sometimes honestly a person has, let's say for instance, their parents have grown up here, have worked here, and it becomes a challenge, you know, to give them the right information, the right documentation to actually help them, you know, advance in their careers. But I would say that for Matthew's case, he didn't denter. He still went ahead and proceeded. But then again, it is limiting him, of course. But I think it's also needful to understand where does he actually then fall? Where do these children then actually fall? And what the minister said is very important. Those children suffer really a lot in terms of documentation. But yeah, I sure hope that the address by the minister towards her staff and her colleagues is going to be taken very seriously. And you know, there are some people as a minister, a supervisor, somebody will be addressing addressing the employees or addressing the workers. There are those who actually take it into consideration to say, you know what, I need to improve in this area. I need to set up ways to actually correct this particular part. And there are those ones who feel like it's just unnecessarily, you know, they sort of to say you're ungrateful with the little that we are doing. But I think it's at this point where, as much as we, you know, the public want the best service from our government and from public servants, we too also have our duty to play, especially in our respective employment of work, to give service delivery and very good service delivery. Imagine if every institution, every public, public servant, every government, every private sector, everyone was giving their best in service delivery, you know, there would be a lot of efficiency and we'll get very far ahead, you know. But yeah, let's pause right here now and take a trip to the marketplace. Of course, this is on the Reader News Analysis, where we bring you more than just the headlines of the news. We want to get into the context of it and understand the practicality of things happening and the experience of people, or of lived experiences on people on the ground, that is for the betterment of Namibia and the betterment of service delivery to the Namibian people. Now, 083-288-401 is the number in studio should you want to ask a question or contribute to your opinions. That is 083-288-401. Let's pause here now, take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly. Stay tuned.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
Likurane ngeno wapubwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite okoye ekukulile
Oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana. Konongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna emi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nuneuto otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi tayo loka. Okwene ushendi fenawa nukumona oijabwa ili nawa. Ninge pata fanoa na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ileko berewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu matatu o mafilane Eagle FM.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Care that builds with you. That's the rollover benefit from NHB. When you claim less than a defined amount of your day-to-day benefits in a year, the unused amount is carried over for the next year, like a savings account or your health. You can use your rollover benefit in many ways, from co-payments to medical costs usually not covered, even contribution holidays. Learn more at nhb.com.na. T's and C's apply. NHB, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHB, we're about you.
And for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome to News Beyond the Borders of Namibia. We're starting off in South Africa and Limpopo flooding. Now, the damage to infrastructure is projected to cost about 10 billion Namibian dollars. That is after the Limpopo government has revised its projected flood relief funds for almost 4 billion to 10 billion.
Devastation left by the January floods in the northeastern parts of Limpopo is being handled as a pressing matter. Damage to infrastructure is now projected to cost that they will rebuild the damaged infrastructure. That they will rebuild rent. Authorities are hopeful that they will rebuild the damaged infrastructure.
Our preliminary assessments indicate that we may require close to 10 billion for comprehensive recovery initiative.
Inflation measured.
We remain hopefully that we will successfully rebuild Limpopo from this disaster with the resources we are beginning to mobilize while we await further intervention from the National Disaster Management Center.
Meanwhile, the small town of Phalaborwa has reported massive service delivery delays, including the provision of water and electricity. This has forced the postponement of the annual Marula Festival, which normally draws scores of tourists to Phalaborwa.
Phalaborwa, to us as a provincial government, is still a place of pain. And it is as a result that we have made a difficult but yet necessary decision to postpone the build-up activities of Marula festivals, including the main open-air music festival. We've decided to take all the resources and the funds that were aimed at supporting this festival so that we redirect them towards rebuilding the Bapalaburwa municipality.
In the meantime, the province has set a total of 800 million from its own coffers towards flood relief. Katlego Nyoni, SABC News, Polokwane.
Alarming rise in cervical. There is an alarming rise in cervical cancer cases, according to Dr. Tumelo Moyaba. Let's take a listen to that.
Africa lose their lives to cervical cancer each year, with over 10,000 new cases reported annually. To talk to us about that, we're joined by Dr. Tumelo Moyaba, a clinical oncologist at the Limpopo Oncology Clinic. Dr. Moyaba, good evening. Thank you so much for your time. Really do appreciate it. Well, cervical cancer is often described as preventable. Talk to us through that, through what means, perhaps clinical and non-clinical. In what ways is it preventable?
Cervical cancer is actually now a cancer for low to middle income countries. And we're seeing it mainly in countries that have not developed an HPV vaccination program. In South Africa, our HPV vaccination program is underway, wherein the government has introduced vaccination among young kids, so that by the time that children turn 12 have been fully vaccinated for HPV. Now, the reason why that is important is 80 to 90% of cervical cancer cases are actually as a result from a virus called human papillomavirus. And that human papillomavirus has got different genotypes, and the common ones are HPV 16 and 18. Now, it is found in Australia and other developed countries that should you vaccinate women for HPV 16 and 18, you are able to prevent 70% of the HPV-associated cancers. That does not only extend only to cervical cancer, but to cancers of the anogenital, oropharynx, and as well penile cancers in men.
Yeah. What has been the uptake of the HPV vaccine in South Africa?
I think the uptake, the program is newly launched compared to our competitors, for example, in Australia and America, wherein the incidences of cervical cancer now are extremely low, because we find that 80% of the cases of cervical cancer actually present in sub-Saharan Africa, where in the highest incidence are in Swaziland. So the uptake and the program in South Africa is still new. There's a gross uptake, and I think what we need is platforms like these, wherein we educate the country and the people about the importance of vaccinating for HPV.
Yeah. Given that we have a national program now that's relatively new, do we have a chronic under-vaccination problem in South Africa when it comes to HPV, and which demographics are most vulnerable to that?
So currently the program is aimed at young girls, and it is thought that you vaccinate the girls, generally you then develop herd immunity for the rest of the society. So the communities that are at most risk would be as well your HIV positive patients. Now, HPV is highly associated with HIV infections, and you tend to see a higher incidence of HPV associated cancer, cervical cancer, uterine and penile cancer in men. So you tend to see it in those populations. Now, that is important because treatment for cervical cancer is one quite effective, where in patients that are diagnosed in stages between 1 to 3, most can be cured. However, it is the access to resource that becomes a problem. Because of such a high incidence, we do not have enough capacity in with regards to human resources. That includes oncologists, oncology-trained nurses, and as well the resources. So the resources that provinces and the people require include radiotherapy, it includes chemotherapy, and we've seen as well with certain provinces having a huge backlog. And for patients that are diagnosed even earlier that require gynecologist or gyne-oncologist to offer radical surgery to actually remove the cancers.
Yeah.
So it is actually better to prevent it compared to treatment, particularly looking at how the continent and South Africa is severely under-resourced with regards to health facilities.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, prevention always is better. But what is the success rate of a treatment for those who have been diagnosed with it in South Africa by and large? And how much of that is attributed towards early detection?
So currently, the two most common cancers in females in South Africa and Africa is actually breast cancer and cervical cancer. Now, breast cancer has got a higher incidence, but compared to cervical cancer, has got a lower incidence, wherein the incidence of cancers or cervical cancer in women is around 17.9%. That is the incidence, compared to breast cancer, which is 25%. But as a leading cause of death, cervical cancer in 2022 data was higher. Now, that is purely because of access. The main required treatments or treatment modalities for cervical cancer are radiotherapy and surgical operations, wherein it's quite common knowledge that access to surgical facilities in South Africa, particularly in the state, tend to be have a huge backlog, and access to radiotherapy centers also has an even bigger backlog, wherein certain provinces, for example, Mpumalanga, do not have a radiotherapy center in the state sector to service the public patients. And that is a common trend as well amongst other provinces. KZN, Johannesburg, you find that there is a big backlog. But there is a move which is highly encouraged and highly commended, wherein there's public-private partnerships to alleviate those backlogs.
Yeah. And just lastly, is the HPV vaccine a once-off or a recurring vaccine?
The HPV vaccine is two injections. There is one, there's one injection, and then there's a booster which is given 6 months later. And that should provide immunity. It is encouraged that vaccination starts before any person engages in any sexual activity. And hence, the vaccinations are starting from an early age, 10 to 12 years.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. Really do appreciate it. That is Dr. Dumelo Moyaba, an oncologist at the Limpopo Oncology Clinic.
Now, Zambia and Ghana seek deeper economic cooperation.
Express Your Excellency, I just want to express really how important the Ghana-Zambia relationship is, how we value this relationship, the trust, the bonds that Ghanaians have with Zambians, dating back to our leaders, Kwame Nkrumah, President Kaunda, and the kind of relationship that they folded, put together, that extended to Ghanaians, citizens, Zambian citizens, leading to deeper relationships, including cross-country marriages, if I may say. somewhat Ghanaians and Zambians have found common interest and created families over years. There can be no deeper relationship, Your Excellency, than that. It strengthens our bilateral relationship from the family, individual's family, but also the issue of business. Ghanaian businesses, Zambian businesses working together over years. And we, the succeeding leaders, so to say, have continued in that trajectory, in the path that our two great leaders kept for Ghana and Zambia, and I must say, for Africa. The Organization of African Unit then, as it was called, President Nkrumah, President Kaunda, Nyerere, and others, played a fundamental role in that Pan-African relationship, so to say.
We're happy to be here in the State House to discuss issues of bilateral relations between Ghana and Zambia. As you rightly said, Mr. President, the relations between Ghana and Zambia have been historic, based on the early relations between our two presidents. President Kaunda and President Nkrumah were friends and comrades in the African liberation struggle. And Ghana virtually became the headquarters for all the freedom fighters, especially after our president declared that the independence of Ghana was meaningless unless it was linked with the total liberation of the African continent. forebears fought the battle of liberation from colonial domination, and they called for us to come as a united continent instead of different countries. I think that today we can appreciate that call even much better, because Ghana will be 70 years would be celebrating 70 years of independence next year, and we all can see as the first sub-Saharan African country to become independent. If we look at the trajectory that the African continent has taken, the divisions that, you know, were created between us by the Berlin Conference has made us not able to develop at an optimal speed and create the kind of prosperity that we need for our people. And so today we can understand that we need to forge even closer links, you know, both in terms of our continental body. But in my discussion with President Chilema, we agreed that we should strengthen bilateral relations even more across regions. And so while we cooperate at the continental level, bilateral relations between countries can make a very big difference. I met the Ghanaian community yesterday in the evening, and they asked me to extend their appreciation and thanks to you and your government for the very kind hospitality that you afford them. They say they feel comfortable and at home.
Interesting. Bilateral relations between a country and a country. Meanwhile, Tanzania benefits from rising copper prices.
Global copper prices have climbed above $13,000 a ton, fueling renewed optimism in Tanzania's mining sector as the metal gains strategic importance in the global energy transition. Long overshadowed by gold, copper is now emerging as one of Tanzania's most promising mineral opportunities. Exports of copper to China, one of Tanzania's key trading partners, reached nearly $25 million in November of 2025 alone. With copper refining facilities now operating in the country's southwest and in the capital, Dodoma, the government says value addition will be key to boosting export earnings.
In the past, a copper-bearing rock was just that, a rock. Today we can process it locally into copper cathodes, which adds value. Previously, this level of processing was not available inside the country. Our current goal is to go even further, producing copper rods and finished wires ready for use.
Authorities say about 13.7 million tons of copper deposits have been identified across Tanzania so far. Over the past 5 years, copper production has more than doubled, rising from just over 21,000 tons in 2020 to more than 44,000 tons by early last year. Analysts believe that if managed effectively, copper could help Tanzania diversify exports, attract new investment, create jobs, and integrate the country into global green energy supply chains at a critical moment. Tanzania's mining sector has long been dominated by gold, which accounts for around 90% of mineral exports, generating nearly $4.5 billion in revenue last year. To expand the sector's contribution, currently at just over 10% of GDP, the government is looking to diversify its mineral portfolio, with copper playing a central role in that strategy. Critics argue that despite growth in the mining sector, job creation for young Tanzanians remains limited. They say the industry relies heavily on capital-intensive operations that require specialized skills, leaving little room for unskilled local labor. The government, however, says it is working to change that.
A new program called Mining for a Better Tomorrow is designed to ensure people are allocated their own mining areas instead of trespassing on other claims. They will receive training in mining practices, mineral processing, and mineral trading, enabling them to benefit directly from their God-given natural resources.
With rising investment and sustained global demand, Tanzania's copper output is projected to exceed 205,000 tons by 2030. The government hopes that increased revenue from copper will help usher in a new phase of economic growth, benefiting both the country and its people. Isaac Lukando, CGTN, Dar es Salaam.
Meanwhile, Zimbabwe's inflation falls to a single digit for the first time in nearly 30 years.
In the local ZIG slowed to 4.1% in January, while US dollar inflation was down to 1% during the same period. For decades, Zimbabwe has been synonymous with hyperinflation, which at its peak crippled the economy, forcing repeated currency changes and eroding public trust. Now, with inflation back in single-digit territory, officials say the country is entering a new phase of price stability, a welcome break from the turbulent past. Authorities credit the turnaround to strict fiscal discipline, tighter control of money supply, and currency reforms, including the introduction of a gold-backed local currency.
Our money supply growth has been managed at less than 2% by the monetary authorities. I think over the last year, and this compares favorably with previous years' money supply growth of above 10%. So the monetary authorities have done quite well in that area.
Government has also reined in spending, running up a budget deficit of about 0.3% in 2025.
Analysts say that the next challenge for authorities here is to ensure that the stability can be sustained in the long term, so many citizens who still complain of limited incomes can start to feel the relief.
Some people I spoke to say the headline figures have yet to translate into tangible benefits.
There are still huge price variances on a single product. For example, one shop is selling a bottle of cooking oil for $3, another for $3.50. So that means there is still more to be done to get stability.
We say they must do a little bit better to ease the burden on the general public, to ease their buying power. Yeah, they are doing well, but there is need to put ZIG to be in circulation.
Analysts believe the impact will eventually trickle down.
For the ordinary person in the street, they will say the economy is growing, inflation is under control. They want to see it. They really want to see it on the ground. But there are three things that have been very positive. Availability of goods and services at an optimum and ideal price.
They've also downplayed fears of deflation, which is the reduction of the general level of prices in an economy due to persistently low inflation.
The advantage that this economy has is that it has got aggregate demand. So the possibility and the likelihood of deflation, that will not happen.
The government has urged businesses and employees to align their prices and wage demands to prevailing inflation statistics in order to maintain the current stability. Farai Mokutuya, CGTN, Harare, Zimbabwe.
Now in other news, Minister Tao and Win Tao advance South Africa and China trade ties.
Minister of Trade and Industry, Park Star, and his counterpart from the People's Republic of China, Minister Wang Win Tao, have signed the framework agreement on economic partnership for shared prosperity. Tao is currently leading the South African delegation in Beijing, China, for the Joint Economic Trade Commission alongside Win Tao. And the minister has joined us this morning to have a quick conversation about this deal. Minister, thank you. We really appreciate you being able to join us this morning.
Good morning, and thank you very much.
Minister, I know we've got not too much time, so I suppose I'm going to jump straight into it and just ask, what does this agreement entail, and what is different to this as opposed to other agreements that we've got in place with China?
Well, essentially, the Chinese government has made an offer, which offer indicates that we would have a tariff-free access to the Chinese market, that there'll also be no limits on quotas of products that we'll be sending into the Chinese market. So it's a very lucrative offer for South African business that seeks to do trade with the Chinese government. Out of this agreement, we're now working on implementation measures, and those implementation measures would include early harvest initiatives. So what are the first set of products that we can get into the Chinese market? They include investment in industrialization in South Africa. They include agreements on standards and regulations so as to facilitate ease of access into the Chinese market and investment in South Africa. But they also include opportunities for South African companies that wish to establish base in China.
That's a very big thing, because that was one of the biggest concerns in terms of trade and particularly industry in South Africa, South African industry, because sometimes we do see that there is a bit of an imbalance when we talk about undermining local manufacturing here in South Africa in favor of using cheaper manufacturers in China. And we see many industries, unfortunately, suffering a lot because of this. So how do we ensure that we get that trade balance?
There are specific sectors that we've had discussions on this morning, and amongst others would be the automotive industry. You would know that BAIC had committed to establish manufacturing capability in South Africa. They've been assembling in South Africa and have committed that as from this month, they would be manufacturing in South Africa. We also have Chery that has initiated the process of buying the Nissan plant and establishing a Chery plant in Pretoria. There are the automotive manufacturers that we're also seeing, and component manufacturers, including in tires that we're seeing today. And this is about Chinese companies that are able to establish base in South Africa and integrate with the local supply chains, ensure that localization happens and that component manufacturers in the country are able to participate. We also had a discussion around steel and related industries, issues in relation to chrome, ferrochrome, issues in relation to smelters that we've lost and the need to rebuild. You would know that China owns Samanco, amongst others, through Sinosteel. The Chinese own Samanco, amongst others. And they've also have suffered from the closure of smelters in the country. As we're working with Minister of Electricity and Energy around electricity tariffs, as we're working on measures to support the industry, it was also about encouraging the Chinese to reestablish the capacity that we've lost over time in the country. And they've sent positive signals. They've also extended an invitation for us to look specifically at the steel industry. In fact, they've said tomorrow they are arranging for us to meet some of the steel companies that could have appetite to invest in South Africa. So it's really a partnership that's now looking at not just extracting minerals from South Africa, but about industrializing in South Africa.
So finally, I know there's just so much more we'd like to dig into, but we will when you get back. I know this is just in the middle of your visit and there's a lot of other meetings planned. But, I mean, obviously the agreement emphasizes alignment with the World Trade Organization principles at a time when global trade rules are really under strain. So I suppose it's important to ask this question. How does China see partnerships like this strengthening multilateral trade, but particularly for South Africa's industry?
Well, amongst others, China has indicated that they've made this offer to all African countries, but that free access would be available for least developed countries without the need to have any form of reciprocation. And then we've identified a set of products that we think the Chinese would want to sell into the South African market that are not sensitive in the South African market, so that our own industry is not overwhelmed, so that we are able to comply with World Trade Organization rules in terms of most favored nations protocols that we need to comply to. So that's the first set of issues that we're working on with the Chinese. The second is about the broader multilateral arrangements of the World Trade Organization. We had brief discussions about the upcoming Ministerial Conference 14 that's taking place in Cameroon towards the end of March, at which Ministerial Conference would want to have focus on how we strengthen the World Trade Organization and rebuild its capability so that you create certainty around rules and in the intermediary period, what mechanisms we can put in place that would govern trade amongst nations.
All right, Minister, we leave it there. Thank you. Good luck with the rest of the trip. And we're hoping that we'll be able to touch base with you once all is concluded and you're back. But obviously, SABC News keeping South Africa updated on this particular deal and more that'll come. That was the Minister of Trade and Industry, Parks Tau, talking to us from Beijing.
Meanwhile, the UN warns of looming humanitarian crisis in Cuba.
The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has expressed concern about the deteriorating situation in Cuba, warning that there could be a humanitarian collapse if the country's oil needs remain unmet.
The Secretary General is extremely concerned about the humanitarian situation in Cuba, which will worsen, if not collapse, if its oil needs go unmet. He notes that for more than three decades, the General Assembly has consistently called for an end to the embargo imposed by the United States on Cuba. The Secretary General urges all parties to pursue dialogue and respect for international law.
Cuba's deputy foreign minister said they were engaged in contacts with the United States, but that exchanges had not developed into a formal dialogue as yet.
We do not have a table of dialogue between the two countries. We have had exchange of messages, we have embassies, we have had communications, but we cannot say that we have a table of dialogue. Now, the U.S. government knows that we are ready to have a serious, meaningful, and responsible dialogue based on the respect for sovereign equality, respect for international law, and that we are sure that there are many issues that we could discuss, including many on which we have differences, and that perhaps many of them could find solution if there were to be a dialogue between the two countries.
Thank you very much. As President Trump was pressed earlier this week about what sort of agreement he was seeking with Havana.
It's a failed nation now, and they're not getting any money from Venezuela, and they're not getting any money from anywhere. It's a failed nation. Mexico is going to cease sending them oil. So I'd like to take care of the people that are here from Cuba. You know, we have many people that came from Cuba that were thrown out of Cuba or that fled Cuba. They came over on rafts. They went through shark-infested waters. I don't know how they did it. And it was many years ago. Many would like to go back. Many would like to at least visit their relatives. And I think we're at a pretty close point. We are dealing with the Cuban leaders right now.
Currently, Cuba's single largest supplier of oil, as the latter faces recurring fuel shortages that have contributed to power generation shortfalls, mass blackouts, and broader economic disruption. Mexico indicating it hoped to send a humanitarian shipment of oil to Cuba this week, without seeking confrontation.
Our goal is to send humanitarian aid this week. We will see if it is possible. Obviously, we also need to know what their needs are, because it is not just a matter of what Mexico decides to send, but rather what is needed in order to send it. So it will be very transparent. We will report on it adequately.
While ordinary Cubans urge dialogue to ease the energy crisis facing the island nation.
I would like there to be a dialogue between Cuba and the United States so that things can be sorted out, so that we as Cubans don't have to go through what we are going through now, the lack of oil, electricity, and those things, so that everything can be more effective, right?
Everyone is concerned, of course. If Venezuela isn't sending fuel and Mexico isn't sending it, who is going to send it? China and Russia are far away and have always supplied very little. Of course, it's worrying, but anyway, let's hope it gets resolved.
A fully fledged United States economic embargo on Cuba has been in.
And with that, we have officially come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dengue program brought to you by Loise Shimi. And also stay tuned for our weekend programs coming up during the weekend right here on your number one talk radio station, where we bring you wonderful discussions on different angles that you can actually learn from. From Idafa, happy as usual, it is goodbye. I'll see you again next time. Same time, same place, same radio frequency, same website, and same Eagle FM app. Bye-bye.